Today's show is sponsored by Talkspace, the online therapy company. For a fraction of the price of traditional therapy, you can pick an experienced, licensed therapist you relate to and feel comfortable with. Each and every therapist has at least a master's degree and has completed over 3,000 hours of supervised work. To match with your perfect therapist, go to Talkspace.com/boom. And to show your support for this podcast, use code BOOM to get $30 off your first month. That's BOOM, Talkspace.com/boom, B-O-O-M.
Welcome to The Heat Check. I'm Wes Goldberg, editor at allyoucanheat.com and writer at FanSided. With me, as always, it's David Ramil. David, we usually do this podcast on a Wednesday, but we're recording on a Monday. Do you know why?
I think it's because the Heat season starts on Wednesday, isn't it?
That's right. The Heat season starts Wednesday, and I have a special sound effect. I'm stoked.
That is awesome. I think that is a great way to start off the podcast, considering where we left off last week and how depressed we both were by the end of the pod. I think we've come and done a complete 180 yet again, and here we are ready for the beginning of the season.
So, no, you know, with the regular season coming back, no more prediction posts, sort of. No more projections, no more rumor posts on allyoucanheat.com. I'm done with all that stuff that gets like thousands and thousands of page views worth of traffic. And we're getting back to real basketball, game recaps, previews, you know, breaking down games, analyzing things, watching games, rewatching games. No more 20 minutes of starters in the preseason against some Israeli basketball team. No more playing the New Orleans Pelicans and the I Ate the Bones Arena somewhere in Louisville or whatever. Like, it's real basketball, David. I am so excited.
The I Ate the Bones Arena, you know, it's got a delicious smell to it, so I think it sounds like a fun place to play, to be honest with you. I noticed that the players were a little distracted. I guess it was the wafting smell of KFC throughout the arena, so, I'm still looking forward to it. I think it's going to be a great season, and I'm very glad to be done with the preseason, however.
So excited. We have the Wizards Wednesday night, opening night for the Heat. Season begins tomorrow night on Tuesday night, but for us, it's Wednesday night at home, Washington. Looking forward to that game. Let's just get right into it. To you, this is right away, you know, the Southeast, basically. We'll see how the Hawks do. We'll see if they can bounce back after the Horford stuff. But really, you know, in our little projections and stuff during the offseason, it's been Wizards Heat for the Southeast. This is going to be a great showdown to kind of see where these two teams are and maybe see if somebody has an edge here and see who could possibly come out of the Southeast this year. For the first time in forever, it's not the Heat by a landslide.
Yeah. Unfortunately, I mean, I don't get the feeling that Game 1 will be a true indicator of where Washington is. Mm-hmm. Even though they've got Paul Pierce there, they also have Bradley Beal.
He's out. Yeah.
And I think there are some suspensions there as well. Refresh my memory, who exactly got suspended from the Wizards, because I'm trying to remember exactly who it was, and I can't recall.
I can't remember either.
Paul Pierce was out because of the poking of Joakim Noah, and maybe that should be phrased a little bit differently, but you know what? With Paul Pierce, I think it's appropriate as hell. Mm-hmm. So, Pierce poked Noah.
Nene.
And he gets suspended. Yeah, Nene.
And DeJuan Blair, I guess, matters. And some guy named Xavier Silas. And Daniel Orton. Daniel Orton.
Wow.
He's still in the league? Oh, my gosh. I thought he lasted like 1 year in Orlando. That was it. Huh. Oh, he played for the Thunder last year. Oh, no. 2 years ago. If you can't tell, I'm online looking it up.
No, I figured as much. But you know what? They could probably say the same thing about Sean Williams being there for the Heat on opening night. So
both teams would walk in. Whoa, when did you guys get Orton? Hey, when did you get Sean Williams? Guess what? Sean Williams is starting for us. Oh, okay. Well, at least Orton's suspended for us.
All right. So the Wizards are going to be at full strength. I think it looks like the Heat probably won't be either. At least they'll be a lot closer to full strength because it's just Josh McRoberts who will be sitting out the contest. So I don't know that we're going to see the matchup that everybody's expecting. Mm-hmm. It looks like a real sexy matchup on paper. You know, Wizards, Heat, Southeast Division. Paul Pierce still has some of that hated rivalry, but he's out. They're injured. They're missing some key players. So it's still going to be a good matchup from the Wizards. What can we expect from them on Wednesday night?
Well, they still have Marcin Gortat. He's not suspended as far as I know. So you have the Gortat and Bosch matchup again, which was always interesting in the last few years. And it's going to be more interesting now, I think, because you're going to have Bosch actually kind of going at Gortat on offense rather than just standing on the three-point line and just trying to get him away from the paint. So we have that little dynamic. So it's going to be more of a mano-a-mano thing going on at the center position. So I'm excited for that, and I'm really excited, and you probably already know what I'm about to say here. Norris Cole against John Wall. You know how I like Norris Cole's on-ball defense. I've still been waiting for that tenacious on-ball defense that he showed against Lance Stephenson. I'm still waiting to see that. I'm hoping he was holding out during the preseason. He wasn't bad, but he wasn't like, you know, Patrick Beverley tenacious like he was against Lance last year in the Eastern Conference Finals. I'm holding out hope that that wasn't just a fluke, one-series thing. I want to see if he'll do that this regular season. So those are my two things. I also want to see both of these teams are, if both of these teams will shoot as many three-pointers. Beal's out, but he comes back. You know, the Wizards lose Ariza, who was a great three-point shooter for them last year. They still have guys like Martell Webster. Otto Porter is apparently getting better at shooting the three ball, even though I'm sure he's still not very good at it. And the Heat, I think, are going to shoot more threes this year because they're going to have to, because they're not going to have LeBron James to just, you know, dunk the ball whenever he wants. So I'm kind of excited to see that little thing happen, because if you look at the Southeast right now, you have the Hawks, who love to take three-point shots now with Budenholzer and that Spurs-type offense. The Wizards, who love to take three-point shots. The Heat, who already like to take three-point shots and will probably like it even more this season. So you have a lot of these like modern three-point shooting teams in the Southeast. It could be like a fun, even though it's not a sexy division, it could be a fun one. So I'm kind of excited to see that style of play start to emerge.
Yeah, that's a great point. The added caveat to the whole Norris Cole thing is, of course, his upcoming contract extension. Mm-hmm. I guess Friday is the deadline mm-hmm. for that. So the Heat have a big decision to make in the next few days. I haven't heard anything since the initial report by Ira Winderman, so I don't know where that's going to go. I wonder if he plays inspired defense in order to prove to Miami that he could be the point guard of the future. I'm sure they've already got their decision made at this point, but you know, it should make it an interesting wrinkle when you consider how Norris plays on Wednesday. And I think it is going to be a good matchup. I think Wall, obviously, I think he'll get the upper hand in that, but I think Cole could probably hold his own. He won't get blown apart as easily as other guards would. So I think even Mario, despite his size and his overall strength, I think he's still not quick enough to handle John Wall. Not many guards are, but Cole is probably one of the few who could at least stay with him for the short term.
I'd like to see Napier have a shot at him.
Be careful what you wish for. I don't see that happening. I mean, I don't see it happening, one, and I don't see it being a positive matchup for Miami.
I don't think it would be good for Miami, but I kind of want to see what Napier's got against an all-star point guard, you know? Or all-star caliber. I just kind of want to see, like, out of curiosity.
No, that's great. And it could be one of those things. You hope that it might be just enough to inspire him to play a little bit at a higher level. You know, maybe he'll feel fired up being opening night and everything else, and he'll say, you know, this is a real opportunity for me to prove who I am at the NBA level and go up against an all-star. So, I mean, that's a great point. Who starts in Bradley Beal's absence? Is it Glenn Rice Jr.? Is he out as well? I think Martell Webster's out with a back injury, if I'm not mistaken.
Oh, is he?
Yeah.
So that means that
Porter Jr. is going in for Paul Pierce.
Yeah, and he can't really play shooting guard. So I'd imagine it's Glenn Rice Jr. I don't know I don't know what their free agent situation is, if they signed like some weird depth or something, or let's look it up here really quick.
And I heard Rasul Butler's going to get some minutes. So what? I didn't. Yeah, apparently he's with the Wizards this year. So it's
Daniel Orton and Rasul Butler. Oh my gosh!
And Drew Gooden, we can't forget him.
Oh, I never forget Drew Gooden. Drew Gooden was there last year, wasn't he?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, he was. And Chris Humphries, he's the one who got signed. I know.
Yeah, maybe they put him at shooting guard.
No. Guard?
Humphries, probably not. No chance. So while I'm waiting for their depth chart to load up here, I want to talk a little bit more about that Cole extension because you did a piece about it. I don't know, what was that, last week? What is your gut feeling? Because you kind of slid in there like you think that they already have their decision made, but they do have until Friday. That gets me thinking, are they looking to shop him this week? I don't think that's going to... I don't think that, but some conspiracy theorists might think that. Like, if you already have a decision made, then just extend him, or if the decision is not to extend him, I guess they're not extending them. But what's your gut feeling right now? Do you think they extend him?
I don't.
You don't think they do? I'm with you. I don't think they do it either.
I think they'll eventually make the qualifying offer and hope for the best, but I think based on their... I mean, they can always use Shabazz's improvement throughout the course of the season. And, if you know, Mario is still obviously a viable starter. He's in a good option as a sixth man, as we've seen through the preseason. And if Napier continues to develop, I think that's a good bargaining chip for Miami when eventually they meet with, you know, Rich Paul and try and hammer out the details. I mean, that's another added monkey wrench into the whole process, is that Rich Paul has this delusional concept of how to manipulate the system. We saw it clearly with Eric Bledsoe, and I wonder how it's going to affect the negotiations with, you know, Pat Riley, who obviously is going to be a little upset about how it all played out with LeBron James as well. So, I mean, that should be an interesting, you know, thing, a storyline to watch for in the offseason. But yeah, I think
Norris Cole even keeps him on as his agent at this point.
Well, he just signed with him this summer, right? So, I mean, I guess that was. And maybe he was not, you know, maybe he didn't have any representation for a couple of years there or whatever, and then eventually he went to Rich Paul. Considering the ties to the Northeast Ohio area and his close friendship with LeBron, it makes sense. But just kind of, I guess it leaves a bad taste in everybody's mouth because, you know, Rich Paul is seen as this kind of manipulator for the whole LeBron situation, the way it played out over the summer. And you picture him going to L.A. and Houston and getting, you know, surf and turf dinners all over the place, knowing the whole time that LeBron was going back to Cleveland, and you see him and LeBron sitting across from Pat Riley and Andy Ellsberg in a hotel conference room in Las Vegas, and in the meantime, James is taking text messages from Pau Gasol saying, hey, don't worry, I'm not coming back to Miami anyway, go get your money elsewhere. And to me, that's how I picture the whole negotiation process with Rich Paul, and that's why I'm a little fearful of how it all play out when Norris Cole's involved.
Yeah, and for the Heat, Norris Cole holds more value as an expiring deal right now. Like, there's really no reason to extend him. You don't know if, you know, if you extend him, you're basically, I mean, you can always trade him still, but he's not as valuable because expiring deals are much more valuable than two-year deals, even if something as cheap as Norris Cole's contract might be. But, you know, you could still give him the qualifying offer, like you said, at the end of the year. You have more options available if you don't extend him. It's not like he's a home run guy. You still have Chalmers locked in for 2 years. Napier you have on his rookie scale contract. So, yeah, I'm with you. I don't think that they extend him. And I don't think it's – and I think it's for that expiring deal thing. I think that if Shabazz can progress to at the rate that you and I kind of expect him to and can be worthy of a starting job by the end of the year – and Chalmers really thrives as a sixth man, like I think he will, then you might have to trade Cole and maybe pick up another wing piece or a big man sometime, like, you know, by the trade deadline.
Wow.
You know, I'm not saying it's going to happen, I'm just saying that now that's an option, you know, and that Pat Riley rebuilding this team doesn't really know who it is or what it is right now. It's kind of like an identity crisis, and some of these guys are going to get pushed out of the rotation, you know? It's just going to happen. And so if you have Cole on an expiring deal, hopefully it doesn't happen with him because he's a starter, but you're more flexible that way.
And that's a big gamble, you know, giving him 30 minutes. They're kind of giving him just enough slack so that he may eventually wind up hanging himself. It's like either you're going to play yourself out of your expected contract demands if you don't meet the, you know, expectations of the starting job, or if you do well, then you wind up playing yourself maybe beyond what we can, you know, realistically offer you as far as money is concerned. And then you're just going to have to leave elsewhere, and then, you know, you're somebody else's problem from that point. So that's an interesting conundrum. And
Boy plays so well that they can trade him for even more stuff.
Right. Okay. Exactly. Yeah. So that's an added wrinkle too. Wow. There's a lot to think about. Yeah. And you don't want that kind of hanging over him or the team. From what he said to Winderman, I guess, or when he was talking to media about the whole contract situation, he doesn't make it seem like it's any kind of an issue for him. He's just going to continue playing the way he does. And, I mean, what's a free agent supposed to say anyway? But I think I believe him. I don't think it's a really big issue at this point. I think he's just more about embracing the starting role and trying to showcase what skills he can do, can bring to the table. He's done a pretty decent overall job through the preseason, so I think he'll continue to develop that way. And I think we've seen the highest levels of Norris Cole. I don't know how much more he can possibly produce. It's going to be a good, solid defender, an erratic shooter at times. I mean, he's fast, he's athletic, he's explosive at times, but I think we've seen his ceiling, and you know, if he has to move on elsewhere, so be it.
Yeah, and maybe he doesn't think that, because maybe Cole prefers not to be extended. You never know. Maybe he wants to do the whole Joe Flacco gamble here and just try to have a breakout year and make his money in free agency. If he's extended, he can't really do that.
Yeah, good point. And if I can go back to something you just mentioned right now, you brought up the whole identity crisis, and it's interesting because that's exactly what I've been feeling the last couple of days.
Mm-hmm.
I know we've been joking about, you know, being...
For you personally or for the Heat?
I'm sorry?
For you personally or for the Heat?
What, the identity crisis?
Yeah.
No, I'll keep my issues to my therapist. Okay. I won't bring them up on the pod. But thanks for making, you know, airing my dirty laundry for everybody. I really appreciate that.
I'm just concerned.
No, it's cool. I mean, that's better. This is the kind of feel-good podcast everybody should listen to. I mean,
not the last one. Ignore the last one.
The point being that I really am concerned with this team because I think we're all kind of sitting back a little bit, or let's go back even further. A couple weeks ago, we're looking at the moves that the team was able to make in the offseason, and given how disastrous everybody felt after the LeBron James departure, we're kind of looking at Luol Deng and Josh McRoberts, maybe even Danny Granger, and saying, huh, Riley did a pretty good job. He did everything he could to piece this team together. Now games have come and gone. We've seen some of the rookies and young players playing, you know, to a higher level than we expected. And yes, that's also an added bonus, but we're also missing a big piece of the puzzle, and that's McRoberts.
Mm-hmm.
And so I look at this team, and I'm struggling to figure out exactly how we're going to be able to determine what kind of team this is. They can't hang their hat on the defense that they had maybe in the late 90s and early 2000s with Alonzo and that kind of, you know, Riley coach team. It's not going to be the kind of Spursy type offense that you and I have talked about, which you patented, by the way, and I think you should get as much money as possible for
it.
The same way Riley, yeah, didn't you? I think that's all you, Spursy offense. I can remember you coming up with that was part of a headline, I think, at one point. Heat to play more Spursy offense. I want to say that's all you, buddy.
Oh my God, I'm gonna edit this out of the podcast so nobody has a chance to patent it before I do.
You should have been like Riley and gotten 3-peat, you know, patented. That was very, I mean, that's a kind of futuristic type move there. I mean, he was looking ahead the whole way. He saw it. He saw that there was a chance to make some added money, and he went for it.
Well, give him credit. If every team in the NBA is looking to be more Spursy, that means I'm getting royalty checks from 29 NBA teams. Or even the Spurs. Even if the Spurs try to use Spursy. Hey, we're so Spursy. Nope. Like, give me money. I don't know how patents work, but I assume I just get royalty checks every time somebody says it, right? Like, money falls into my bank account.
I didn't study law, but it sounds about right. I think it's kind of like this, you know, ethereal PayPal system. Everybody's going to keep dropping money into your account for you. So, congratulations.
Cool. I'm excited for this.
Anyway, to go back, I think we're looking at, you know, McRoberts being a big part of the whole swinging the ball around and getting everything flowing and a lot of back cuts and moving the ball. But we haven't seen that because he's been injured, and we don't know if we're actually going to get that from him once he finally makes it back into the floor. Are you feeling that same kind of anguish that I am, that maybe this team might lack identity throughout the early part of the season and not find it until maybe the halfway point when it might be too late?
David, I don't know if this team's going to find a consistent identity like this entire year, to be honest. I think this team is going to look really, really... Okay, well, let me backtrack a second. My first issue with this team is I don't see the personnel on this squad being able to get hot from three-point range the way the squad was able to get hot like the last 4 years. There's no Ray Allen, no Shane Battier. James Jones isn't even on the team anymore. There's just no Mike Miller, you know, like still no Mike Miller. You just have like these guys like Sean Williams, Danny Granger, like you're Luol Deng, like he's, I don't think he's ever been hot from 3-point range on like for a whole season. He's just, he has his games every once in a while, but he's kind of limited to the corner anyway. I don't see this team getting hot from 3-point range, and that to me is a big problem. You talk about the, and I wrote this when I talked about choosing Andre Roberts over Ken Birch, we'll get to a little bit later, but Andre Dawkins. Okay. Is already a top 4 3-point shooter on this Heat team, and he's a rookie, and he hasn't really done it at the NBA level. I mean, college line is shorter than the NBA line. He's already like, you got Chalmers, Bosch, Granger, and Dawkins, pretty much, right? I'm not forgetting anybody.
Roberts, 37% last year.
37%, yeah, and he's another big man, so top 5, you know, and you could argue that Dawkins might be better than Chalmers or Granger at this point, you know, he's top 4 or 5. So, you know, and he's a rookie, like I said. So I don't know if this team necessarily can get hot from that range, and that has so much to do with spacing and ball movement. Almost everything to do with spacing and ball movement. That ball movement—that's what it's predicated upon. So that's my number one issue. So with that said, I think that this team might have games where it can get hot. You know, where you get three or four, you know, two or three guys just really going off. But and it's going to look good. Like the identity is going to be there. It's going to be Spursy looking. It'll be nice, and Heat fans will love it. And then there's going to be games where they're basically just running their heads into the wall, and it's just not going to look good, and it's just going to be a struggle to score. It's going to be one of those 85-80 games, and you hope you're the one with 85 points and that defense could step up. That's kind of how I'm feeling after this preseason, and I know we haven't seen McRoberts yet. This whole idea, and I keep saying this, is that you see on Twitter and you see in the message boards and in the blog comments that, oh, we don't have McRoberts back. Things will change when we have McRoberts. What did we call him last week? McJesus? He's not McJesus. He's McRoberts. You know, he's a role player. He's a 76 overall in NBA 2K. He's nothing like that's, he's not going to blow open the doors and say, I'm here and we're Spursy. Like, that's just not going to happen.
Defense hopefully being able to contain teams to 80 points. I mean, is that even realistic though? That's another part of it then. Is that,
David, we're going down our road again.
I know, and I was debating that before we went on there. We started off, maybe I shouldn't even have brought up the point. Let's just focus on the positive. But I honestly thought about this.
Wait, hold on. How you feel now? There we go. Great. Getting pumped. Wizards, we're going to beat them.
110 to 84. We're going to blow the lid off this thing, and the
Wizards have no chance. Dwayne Wade's going to score 53 points and walk right into the Hall of Fame.
Now, that would be impressive. All right. So, should we just abandon the negative road here and just try to focus on the positive? Because there definitely are positive things. I just don't know. Maybe the question then isn't whether or not they can do these things. Then it becomes more about being able to do them consistently.
Right.
You know, are they going to be able to get consistent long-range shooting from anybody on the team? Probably not. Are they going to get consistent perimeter defense or rim protection? They don't have that. I mean, Deng is a good perimeter defender. McRoberts slightly less so. Who else? I mean, I don't know that Wade is going to be counted on for perimeter defense. I don't know that he can, you know, do that at this point in his career. I mean, we don't have an adequate rim protector. I mean,
yeah.
It puts us in a real tough situation. I mean, go ahead.
Here's the thing is, Sean Williams went 5 for 5 in one of those preseason games from downtown. I mean, when he gets going, if he could just, he doesn't have to do that every game, you know what I mean? He just needs to do that every so often, because remember he went 5 for 5, I don't remember which team it was against, but he went 5 for 5, and in the very next game, the defenses were respecting the crap out of him, and they were just closing in on him, and it made so much more space, you know, in that first half when the starters were in. And if he could just do it every so often, then that just demands respect, you know, out of the defense. So if he could do that, if Deng can do that, then all of a sudden we're talking about more room for Bosch, who I still think is going to be on the all-NBA team this year. I really do. And I think Dwayne Wade, with the more space for him, the better. He's already shot more three-point attempts in the preseason than he did all of last year. So he's going to actually be shooting threes. And if he could just do it at a, even a 30% clip, but do it consistently. Maybe defenses don't just give him 10 feet between him and the three-point line anymore. Like, so they don't have to do it every game. And we talk about, like, they have to do it every game, but they just need to do it every so often so that defenses respect it and that they have space in the middle for guys like Chalmers, Wade, and Bosch, and McRoberts to do things in the middle. And Dang. Dang can still get to the basket.
Okay. So this is our overall outlook on the season. Maybe we should take it a step back and just kind of focus on the upcoming opening night and then the rest of the schedule for the first week of the season.
Let's look at it.
All right.
So we got the Wizards Wednesday. Yep. Go ahead.
No, no. Washington Wednesday. You're right. I think the key matchups there are the point guard and the center spot. That should be really interesting. I mean, I think that's their strength with Nene and Pierce out and Glenn Rice starting. I mean, I don't know how much we can expect from him. I guess Otto Porter is kind of an unknown factor at this point. I don't know. They're too weak at this point, and I see Miami being able to beat them pretty clearly. I read a prediction already that shows that it's going to be a pretty tight game, and then Miami will probably win it. I guess that seems pretty fair. I guess considering the questions on offense for both teams, I think it's pretty fair to say that it'll probably be a low-scoring game, and then Miami will win it at home.
It'll be low scoring for sure, I think. And I like that you're picking Miami to win. We're starting off the year positive in your predictions.
Let me hear it again. Let me hear the horn again.
I got to get it loaded up on my phone. Wait, I'll say it again. I'm glad you're starting off the year positive in your predictions. There we go.
That was great. Now I'm fired up. All right. So one game. Already under book in the books, and we're going to win that one
1-0 easily.
1-0, yeah. Saturday, November 1st, team travels to Philadelphia to take on supposedly NBA team called the 76ers.
Yeah, and that supposed NBA team beat us last year.
That's right. And in the second game on a back-to-back to start off the season.
So there's no way we lose the 76ers twice in 2 years. There's just no way. I'll play the odds on this one. Miami's 2-0. I mean, the 76ers, they'll have Nerlens Noel back. He should be an interesting obstacle for a team that wants to get to the rim and space the floor a little bit. He could kind of, I mean, if he plays defense like anything like he did at Kentucky, he'll be able to be a factor. I don't know how Philadelphia plans on playing him, if they want to make him trap pick and rolls or if they want him just standing near the basket and swatting basketballs or doing a little bit of both or what, but it should be interesting to see him. Other than that, I mean, I don't really. Michael Carter Williams is 6'6", 3 inches taller than Chalmers and Cole. I mean, whatever.
Isn't he out for a good portion of the start?
Oh, that's right. He is. Forgot about that. So.
Yeah, he's the one who killed us. I mean, he made basically his NBA debut against the Heat, and he nearly notched a triple-double. I think he was one assist or one rebound shy, if I'm not mistaken, of getting a triple-double in his first NBA game. And I think that kind of early buzz when the team started off 3-0, if I'm not mistaken, that was kind of what propelled them into the rookie of the year discussion. So I don't know. I don't expect them to be a serious threat to Miami. I think with, you know, 3 days rest in between the Wizards game and the 76ers game, I just don't see them being that much. And I don't think Philadelphia cares at this point. Right? No. I think it's going to be interesting to see. You know, I think, again, the Bosch matchup should be an interesting one. If Noel starts at the center, which I think is where he's going to start, correct?
Yeah, the Heat want to win this game. The 76ers, like you just said, they kind of just want to lose all these games. If they lose, they'll be happy, and if we win, we'll be happy. And I think the Heat, they really, more than last year, like last year they were just like, all right, let's get through 82 games, it's a marathon, so on and so forth. This year, they're going to want to get off to a hot start. They're going to be really motivated, probably more motivated than we've seen them in a long time, like in the regular season, in this first few games to get out to a good start because they're going to want to get some momentum going forward. So I think we've already spent too long talking about the 76ers game.
But an added wrinkle to look at as far as Philadelphia is concerned is that the following night, the team comes back home to take on the Raptors. So facing our first back-to-back set of the season, does Wade make an appearance in both games? Do they hold him out against Philadelphia, being that that's basically a D-League team at this point? And do they just reserve him for playing Sunday night? These are questions that we have to look at.
Yes, that's a good point, actually. Because last year, this whole maintenance program, Spoelstra kind of revealed that he predetermined all the games that Wade was going to sit. So when we were talking about, like, last year, when the Heat were had a chance to maybe grab that number one seed, and they kept resting Wade, we were like, what the hell are you guys doing? Like, you have a chance to get the number one seed. Just play him these last couple, this last week. That's all you got to do. And they were just like, no, he's sitting this game. He's sitting that game. It was kind of like those were, from what Spoelstra was saying, predetermined. Like, before the season already began, they just went through the calendar and was like, no, 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 you're out these games. And then that's why he played 54 games. But this year, he's not on a maintenance program. So I don't know if that means that it's not going to be a predetermined maintenance program or if it's just going to be, you know, how's your knee feeling today? Good? All right, get out there. Or what it might be. Who knows? So the Heat have the 76ers and Raptors back-to-back and then Rockets, Hornets, Tuesday and Wednesday. So those are two back-to-backs. I don't see it. I just don't see Wade playing all four of those games, so he's going to miss one of those games. And if you're realistic about it, you think, okay, don't play the 76ers game and don't because it's the 76ers, and then don't play the Rockets game because it's a Western Conference, but play the Raptors and play the Hornets, who we might be battling for a playoff spot.
Exactly. But to that point, though, you look at who's on Houston, and you know we saw him play against
That's
Houston
right.
the other night and the matchup against James Harden. And you know he's going to take it up a notch. So
that's right.
maybe he asks in. Maybe he says to Spoelstra, pulls him aside, and says, "Look, I want to play against Houston. I want to play against you know the Bobcats. I'm sorry, the Hornets." And I think that you know maybe he makes an appearance in all of them. And maybe we're you know blowing steam at this point. We don't know exactly how it's going to play out. Maybe he's willing and able to go through these back-to-back sets, and it sets a template early in the season, and then we don't have to address these lingering health questions the rest of the year. So that would be great. I mean, obviously, I think everybody would hope that he will play in all five games, that he'll perform at a high level, and we can just kind of move on and not necessarily address it for the rest of the year. But I don't see that as being realistic.
Yeah, and then you have that scare, like he tries to jump the gun here and play all these games or something, or maybe just miss one of them, and maybe gets a setback on the knee or something, and then it kind of derails him for a few weeks, and then we're dealing with this for the rest of the year, and who knows, but I think all Heat fans are just, like, worried about his knees, but it's just the Heat don't have the luxury to just rest him on in any given night. And I think you're right. I think that Rockets game, he's just going to say, no, you can't sit me out. I'm going against this guy. Kevin Durant thinks he's still better than me. Like, that's not going to happen. And I think best-case scenario for Heat fans is that this just becomes the year of redemption Wade. Just, you know, we saw rookie Wade. We see the Flash Wade, we saw 2006 Finals Wade, we saw Hall of Famer Wade between, like, you know, sure Hall of Famer between, like, that 2010 area, and then we saw Big Three Era Wade, where he took a step back, and now maybe we get Redemption Wade, you know what I mean? Like, maybe this, like, the next few years of his career is just about getting revenge on the NBA that never really did anything to him.
That's a great point, and I actually see that as being a very realistic thing for him. I think we've kind of with the stories that have broken the media over the last couple of weeks, everybody's kind of seeing that attitude from Bryant, Kobe Bryant, but why not from Dwayne Wade? Wade's just as competitive, if not more so. I think we could expect Wade to be kind of pissed and carry that chip on his shoulder and want to prove to everybody that maybe he's been dismissed somewhat, that he was the one who, you know, chose to take a step back in the Big Three era, but that he was just as capable of carrying his team had he been given the chance. And I think he could do a great job over the next couple of years. And if, you know, that's the end of his career, I think it would still be a storied one, certainly a Hall of Fame one. You know, a lot of people consider him to be one of the top five shooting guards of all time. I think that's a valid conversation.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't see why he wouldn't just do what he can in the next 2 years, hope for whatever health he has left so he can enjoy his old age and, you know, kind of walks off into the sunset with a Hall of Fame career in his belt. I think that's a great, you know, attitude to have for the next 2 years, just to kind of prove everybody wrong and say, you know what, I could always do this. I chose not to. I want to end it on my own terms. He made some points about Steve Nash that were kind of, you know, we've seen a lot of development from Wade in that, you know, when he was this somewhat older rookie, you know, with life experience because he had a child, he was married, and I think that was a big plus when Riley was looking at who to draft, but we've seen him kind of develop and mature as the spokesperson for the team and like you just mentioned, all the different phases of his life and throughout his career, everything he's undergone. And he's really shown some incredible introspection as of late. I think the whole LeBron era kind of shifts the spotlight just enough. And when he was talking about Steve Nash lately, one of the things that really stood out for me was how he, you know, first of all, he really admired Nash, the way he played, and I think that's easy to understand.
Mm-hmm.
But he also said, you know, how important it is for athletes to go out when they can on their own terms. And I know that's a pretty common theme. Nobody wants to see injury derail your career the way we saw with Alonzo Mourning in 2007. But I think, you know, with Wade, I think it's a little bit more relevant. And I think he'd want to do what he can over the next 2 years, really play his heart out. And then when his contract expires before all that money kicks in, maybe just call it a career. So I think that's something to realistically look through. I know we're jumping way ahead of ourselves, but it's something to consider when we see him going through these back-to-backs in the next couple of weeks, you know, next week rather. You know, is it really going to set the tone for him? So maybe he says, you know what, screw it. I'm just going to do what I can. If it puts added pressure on my knees, it's worth it so I can go out on my own terms and I can, you know, define my legacy this way rather than having injury just kind of slowly creeping through. What am I playing for in 3 years that I can't achieve in the next two?
Yeah, I don't think you're jumping the gun because this is another phase in Wade's career. We don't know what phase it's going to be, though. We don't know what we're going to title this one because they do have these back-to-backs in these first five games, and this is kind of – Wade's at a point in his career where he has to start thinking not game-to-game but almost year-to-year or year ahead. Like, okay, playing these back-to-backs, I need to set a precedent. I need to decide how I'm going to do this, and him and Spoelstra and the trainers need to kind of get together and do this. What I didn't understand last year was that even though they didn't play, even though they were playing Wade every so often, they sat him out for 28 games. When he did play, he was going all out for 36 minutes at a time, you know, or, you know, 34 to 36 minutes a game. And I never really understood that when you look at the San Antonio Spurs and they were playing 30 minutes a game. And people say, oh, maybe Wade didn't sit out enough games last year. I disagree. I think Wade sat out plenty of games, but he might have played too many minutes in those games. You start taking off 4 to 6 minutes a game, and all of a sudden, maybe he's looking a little bit fresher just for all they needed was one more series out of him. So I'm wondering now if maybe it's not like I said, predetermined games that he's sitting out, but maybe predetermined 30 minutes a game, just like the Spurs did. And if this is going to be, maybe they're being Spursy with Wade's minutes this year. And I think they really should look into this. Now you have to convince Wade, look, you're only playing 30 minutes a game, and you might not be able to get all-star numbers, but he played 28 minutes against, what was that, what game? What preseason game was it where he scored 26 points?
Houston.
Against Houston. So, yeah, he won't be going against Harden defense every game, but he scored 26 points in 28 minutes in that game. He's more than capable of doing it. So if you're playing him 30 minutes a game, I think that's probably the right move. That's just me, though. What do I know? I mean, I only called the Spursy and Mario Chalmers as a sixth man before Spoelstra thought of it. So, but I don't know anything.
Boom! I think you've just proven yourself yet again. And coming full circle here, it's great that you brought up how we're going to see possibly reduced minutes for Wade, and then we look at the roster moves that have been made over the last couple of days. I think you know, they've waived the final number of players. And we've got a 15-man roster set at this point. And much to my disappointment, we saw Ken Birch, Tyler Johnson, Sean Jones, and I'm losing...
Larry Drew the second.
I'm sorry. Oh, yeah, Larry Drew. That's right.
The second.
Right. I'm sorry. Larry Drew the second. Sorry. Larry Drew the second is the one who was finally waived. And that means that the Heat have kept on Shannon Brown. So I was a little disillusioned at first. And I guess now, well, my disillusionment was based on the fact that for so long we've seen Miami kind of ignore the so-called youth movement. You know, they've rarely given young players a chance, always favoring the veteran model. I mean, that's just Pat Riley's old school mentality. He doesn't care about the draft, and so by extension, neither have I. He doesn't care about signing young players off the waiver wire. He just doesn't do that sort of thing, and by extension, neither have I. And so now all of a sudden, you see these young guys getting some significant minutes during the preseason. And I guess I was kind of hoping that maybe Shannon Brown would be the guy to go. And then he would continue to develop Andre Dawkins, who we kept on the roster, and Kem Birch, who I saw as raw but with a lot of potential. But now in looking at how Wade might be managed this, you know, season, it makes much more sense to say, you know what, unfortunately we couldn't keep Ken Burch. We have to keep an added guard around, even though Mario is probably going to get a significant amount of minutes at the two guard. You know, maybe he'll shift to the point if we eventually move Cole, and then you kind of want to have somebody like Andre Dawkins or Shannon Brown who can fill in that two guard spot.
Yeah, and you're looking at like a top 9 or 10, which is usually what Spoelstra keeps the rotation to, and there's three rookies on this roster, and none of them might be in that top 10 other than Shabazz Napier. You might not get much James Ennis, and we might not get much Andre Dawkins, but they both certainly have their qualities that this Heat team needs, so I think it's interesting that Spoelstra at least kept them around, you know? I mean, Ennis, I think, was a lock after that Summer League performance in a couple of games. It was like, okay, this guy's making the roster. He's not going back to Australia. You know, he's staying right here. And I was very... Dawkins kind of seemed to me to make like a late push. He didn't really get much playing time in those first couple of preseason games, so he kind of made a late push for a roster spot, and I think that three-point shooting is what gave him the edge over a guy like Birch, and like you said, that need for more guard depth, as opposed to maybe they're kind of settled in on Sean Williams, Mick Roberts, Anderson, and Bosch as their big man rotation, maybe playing Granger a little bit in there. But
and Haslam, don't forget UD.
I didn't forget him. He's a victory cigar. He's that's an interesting point though, because really, if you're thinking about who's the better basketball player right now, I would venture to say, and maybe I'm wrong here, but I'm pretty sure I'm not, Ken Burch is better at basketball right now than Udonis Haslam is for an 82-game season. Haslam did not look good in the preseason. Haslam did not look good in the preseason. He was turned around on defense, not because he didn't know where to go, but just because he didn't really get his feet under him. He seemed like, you know, four or five steps behind the play all the time. He was slow down the court and just was missing shots really, really badly. I mean, the guy's just done. Like I said, like, he's done. I mean, he's the Juwan Howard of the locker room. And when we talk about this Heat culture kind of staying around, I guess they're always going to have this really old guy who's just kind of there for moral support. I guess they're just always going to have the Juwan Howard spot on the bench, and now that's Udonis Haslam.
And you know, that just puts his sacrifice over the summer when he opted out and he winds up sacrificing millions yet again. I mean, I know he's making plenty of money hawking those Subway subs and everything else, but man, he's given up a whole hell of a lot of money to help preserve the integrity of this team.
So he's got to be promised a front office position or something. They're telling him, look, we'll make it up to you. We're going to give you a huge deal when you sign to our front office. He's got it written down in an Excel spreadsheet, or if it's Haslam, he's probably just got it written down on the back of a receipt somewhere, like, opted out, and that cost me this much money. Opted out again, that cost me this much money. Ignored the Dallas Mavericks contract, that cost me this much money, and that's how much his contract's going to be with the front office.
I can't wait for Carnival Cruise Lines to unveil, you know, the Haslam, which is like a super yacht, you know, huge cruise ship, rather, that you know, seats millions and serves nothing but Subway subs, to which Udonis Haslam has an exclusive contract for. Because, I mean, that's the future, I think, that Haslam deserves.
Yes.
And I think Mickey Arison can make it happen. Even though he's no longer, what is he, president or CEO of Carnival, I think he still has some pull within the organization. So
henna tattoos for your neck. Little station there on the cruise line. I mean, Udonis Haslam, jersey shop. I mean, it's just going to have everything.
Take your picture with like a cardboard cutout of DD when you walk out on the boat. I mean, it seems exciting.
Throw an elbow at a dummy, get a technical. It's my favorite game. I can't believe they have it here.
All toilets are shaped like David West for some reason.
Okay.
Tyler Hansbrough. Derailed yet again, as is always the case here with the Heat Check podcast.
Yep. It wouldn't be the Heat Check if we didn't get completely off topic. So to continue checking in on the Heat, so I was a little surprised that they got rid of Birch. I'm pretty sure I wrote a post about 2 hours before they actually announced it, saying that it's probably going to come down to Dawkins and Birch, which I think Ira Winderman reported, and I did like a little post on it and gave my opinion, and I said if I had put money on it, I'd bet on Birch making it, and I think that's what most Heat fans would have said, given what happened in the preseason and how impressive he was, but yeah, I think the reason a lot of people are impressed with him and kind of he became a fan favorite because he reminds people of a young Haslam, and I think we want that back. We kind of want that, especially in this post-LeBron era, we want that Haslam kind of grody type physical player who's just going to not even look to score, just get me rebounds, let me set hard screens, let me protect my guys kind of thing. We want that back, and since Haslam's a victory cigar now, the Juwan Howard spot, I think we wanted that with Birch, but it's just too redundant between him, Haslam, and even Chris Anderson to another degree. It's just, you know, defense first guys. It's just too redundant, and he just wasn't going to get minutes, especially if you start putting in Birch over Haslam. Haslam might be dealing with a lot, you know, taking a back seat right now, but if you start putting that rookie out of UNLV over me, Udonis Haslam, Heat lifer, I'm going to have a problem with that.
How does it work now? I mean, has he cleared waivers? He hasn't been picked up by anybody. Right. What's the process if he makes it? Will he get assigned to the D League, or is this a player choice, or do the Heat have rights to him? How does it work out exactly?
It's a player choice. They offer him a spot on the D League. So during this process, I think it's like it's something like three players that they've waived from this. Their 20-man roster, they can offer D-League contracts to. So you assume that would be Birch, Andre Birch, Ken Birch. Gosh, I keep getting their names mixed up. Ken Birch.
That's all right.
Probably.
Tyler.
Who?
Tyler Johnson and Larry Drew the second.
Tyler Johnson, Larry Drew the second. Or Sean Jones.
Possibly, yeah.
Yeah.
I thought I heard when Larry Drew got signed that.
That's probably why they did it.
Foregone conclusion. Yeah, I thought that was the case. I know he already spent some time with the Skyforce.
Yeah.
Sioux Falls Skyforce. Yeah, because I keep wanting to call it Sioux City, but it's Sioux Falls Skyforce.
I think you've called it Sioux City on the podcast once, but I'm not sure.
Damn it. And you didn't point it out to me. You just left me hanging out there, huh? Thanks a lot, Wes.
At least I corrected you just now. So, probably like 8 podcasts too late, but whatever. That's the reason why they signed Larry Drew the second, is because he has to be part of that 20-man group that you waive in order to have kind of like first dibs to option off to the D-League. It's a player, like the player does not have to accept it, but at this point, these players kind of know that they're not going to get anywhere else, so I'd assume that all three of those guys probably go to Sioux City.
And not say, you know, Europe or Turkey. Or,
right. And, you know, that's always the option, especially for big guys like Birch. You always kind of think, like, okay, they might get, like, those guys tend to get deals overseas and stuff like that. But I figure that this guy kind of wants to stick around the Heat organization. You know, like, because James Ennis went to Australia, but that was more because the Heat kind of had a deal with him. Like, go ahead, go to Australia, make your money this year. You're coming back. Like we're not going to leave you in Australia to die from some poisonous snake bite or something.
I think it's tarantulas and dingoes that they worry about mostly.
No, they have the highest population of venomous snakes in Australia.
Oh, God. Damn, that's scary.
No, just don't go there. Yeah, because you're right. It's tarantulas. They have like crocodiles,
sharks.
Yeah, they have box jellyfish. Just don't go there. Just don't.
And you wonder why it was a penal colony in the first place, because it sounds like such an inviting and warm place.
I'm glad we're still on track here.
that was going to be the name of the podcast, something about the Go to Australia podcast or something.
Don't go to Australia, the podcast.
Well, I think we've looked at the week pretty in-depth here, and I think we see... If we had to give a prediction as far as the first 5 games of the season, not knowing if Wade is going to play, if he's going to be available for all those, I would be comfortable in saying 3-2.
That's what I was saying.
Yeah, 3-2, maybe even as high as 4-1. I think we didn't really talk about the Raptors matchup, but I think that's kind of an interesting one for me personally, because I think what their performance last year, considering how they were trying to tank and got rid of Rudy Gay and how they kind of wound up developing this incredible incredible camaraderie and making this late postseason run. I mean, are they going to be able to duplicate it? I don't have a lot of faith in Dwayne Casey as a coach, but you know, they retooled, they brought in a couple of other backups there to help out with the whole overall performance, and they got Kyle Lowry back, which was obviously a Heat target for the agency. So I think Toronto should be a pretty solid team. I'm still not 100% sold on them, and maybe that's my own issue.
Yeah, I really like Toronto this year. I think that they can be kind of like a Portland Trailblazers type team, where they just get to like a crazy hot start. If you think about the Eastern Conference, the Pacers are no good anymore. The Bulls have, talk about identity crisis. They have something going on in that front court that everybody keeps talking about how great Pau Gasol is as an addition, and he is. But they need to figure out what that minute situation. Are you playing Pau at the end of games? Are you playing Taj at the end of games? They're doing a little bit of Pau at center and Joakim Noah at power forwards. There's like a whole new dynamic there. Noah's not going to be facilitating the offense like he was the last couple years. It's going to be back in Derrick Rose's hands. So how does Noah fit into the offense? There's going to be a lot of things going on there. So you have that little. They're going to have a phase to adjust. The Cleveland Cavaliers, of course, that's, you know, they're going to need some time, I think. And then, you know, the Wizards, they're not necessarily a juggernaut, you know, in the East. So the Hornets are kind of a new squad with Lance Stephenson, Nomer McRoberts. They have Vonleh now, whatever. I think, like, Toronto's really got that whole team intact now. I think that just that chemistry can really get them off to a hot start. I'm actually, if I'm going to pick one game for us to lose, it's going to be that Raptors game. But I really like them this year in the East. I think that they're going to be a top four seed. I really think they're going to. I think they're going to get off to a hot start, and they're just going to kind of ride that.
Interesting.
But that's just my take. Who knows?
No, it's certainly a possibility, and I think you bring up a lot of good points in that maybe we're just not quite sure exactly how the Eastern Conference is going to play out. I think everybody's expecting, you know, Chicago and Cleveland to be the top two teams, but maybe it doesn't necessarily work as well in either situation. I mean, clearly Cleveland is going to have some problems. I think a lot of people expect them to be this incredible high-powered offense, and that certainly looks to be the case, but they've got some issues on defense. Mm-hmm. Maybe things don't mesh as well in Chicago. Maybe we can just say that the whole of the Eastern Conference is going to be undergoing this incredible conference-wide identity crisis. As you know, I think things really, the apple cart was upset as much as possible when LeBron went back to Cleveland. And so I think that's certainly going to affect everybody else. And you don't have the top teams, Indiana's injuries and Lance Stephenson leaving.
Right.
I think you're going to have a lot of teams that are kind of redefining themselves this year. So it should make it either wide open, interesting. I don't know. It's hard to tell. Maybe it's going to be a whole lot of crap, and you know, the Western Conference is going to continue to dominate the way they have for the last couple of years.
Yep. And just to add on to that really quick, Derrick Rose, Kyrie Irving, they can miss some games this year. They're not healthy people. They can miss games this year, and that could. If it's enough games, that could open up the door for Toronto or Washington or Miami even to slip into that number two seed. Who knows? But or the Hawks. I think the Hawks are gonna be really good. Yeah, I think you're right. Identity crisis in the East. I think that's the storyline in the Eastern Conference. It'll be interesting. Last little topic. We got away from this last couple podcasts. The Washington Wizards are our upcoming game. Cereal or not cereal, David?
I was waiting for you to bring it back up. I didn't feel comfortable mentioning it. I think Washington, with the addition of Paul Pierce, I've got to go definitely cereal.
Definitely cereal. Absolutely. 100%. Okay. Thank you for listening to the Heat Check. You can follow the podcast on SoundCloud and find our thoughts on the Miami Heat in writing at allyoucanheat.com. We have our big predictions post coming out tomorrow morning. So make sure to check that out and check us out again next week. Thanks, David.